Our first guest joins us with the results of their annual survey of the state of well-being, not for people, but for the medical practices that care for the people. As you can well imagine, the medical profession faces rules, regulations, and costs while having to operate a business, which by most is seen and treated as a service. Here to share what's revealed in the Brock Eichler 2019 New Jersey Healthcare Monitor is Brock Eichler's managing member and healthcare law practice chair, John Fanberg. How are you today, John?
I'm doing fine, thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to you and your listeners.
And likewise to you. Learn more about the practice of Brock Eichler. It's the obvious, brockeichler.com. We have a link over to our page, as well as a page directly to this survey and study that we are going to discuss here. Just as a general mission statement for the study, what is it geared to be looking for?
Well, we've been doing this for a number of years now, Chris, and the original intent was to create a baseline in terms of what our healthcare providers in New Jersey are thinking about or concerned about. And as time has gone on, as new issues come up, we change and bring up new ideas and questions for our healthcare practitioners, as well as maintain the same questions year in, year after, to see types of trends in terms of health physicians think about their practice and their ability to provide health care to the patients in New Jersey.
One of the questions, so the first one actually, how has the changing healthcare environment affected your role as a physician within the last year? When you certainly think of just in the industry overall, but in the industry in New Jersey, you're dealing with excessive regulations on the state and federal level. So obviously the answer is increased administrative burden, which is probably no surprise. And this is something I think a lot of people don't understand as patients, reduced reimbursement, which New Jersey has been one of the more challenging states in the nation when it comes to physician reimbursement through the various programs and insurance companies.
That's very true. And we ask that all the time. Physicians are running a small business. And like many people here in New Jersey, they're confronted with increased costs every year to provide whatever the services are. We're in a very highly competitive region. We've had tax law changes here, so it's just as hard for physicians to maintain their practice to provide health care as it is for everybody else. And physicians go into this area to treat patients. They are quite surprised and frustrated that so much of their day now is pouring through paperwork and trying to understand how to maneuver through this highly regulated environment, which takes their ability to spend time with the patients down. And the best way to treat patients is by seeing them, hearing them, and helping to work in a collaborative way. And when they're under pressure and they can't spend that kind of time with patients, healthcare will suffer. And we're seeing patient responses where they complain they don't really have enough time or input from the actual doctor in their healthcare. So it becomes both a concern for the healthcare provider as well as for the patient population.
Another question referred to the income for the professional practices. Again, probably a surprising situation for many, maybe a concern as well. Almost 41% said that the practice's income had decreased from last year. Only just over 9% said an increase, which makes one wonder if all these practices are suffering income decreases, how long are those practices going to stay in New Jersey?
Well, we do see physicians who at the tail end of the career get frustrated with the administrative burden and the reimbursement problem, and they begin to retire early. Fortunately, we have a lot of physicians in New Jersey that are just so patient care centric. They're willing to do more for less. But a lot of physicians who are the younger side who are coming out of programs and training with huge debt, how do they pay for that? And so their options in terms of medicine and the type of structure they enter into is somewhat limited, but they carry this debt for years and years. And I don't think enough of the healthcare awareness is the cost of a medical school education is so daunting. These young doctors need an ability to get, in essence, a return on their investment to stay in this business. And when we have declining reimbursement, it puts that much more pressure on them. Going into a small medical practice is not a feasible alternative today, which is why a lot of physicians are looking to form either single or multi-specialty large medical groups, or to do some type of strategic alliance with a healthcare system to help support their ability to run their business and provide care to their patients.
So John Fanberg, who is Brock Ackler's managing member and healthcare law practice chair, about the results of their 2019 New Jersey Healthcare Monitor, which you can find at their website, and along with information about their services at brockeichler.com. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The question about how practices changed over the last year, almost 51% said no change versus the various other options. You talked about joining, consolidation, retiring, and the list goes on from there. Is the shakedown and view to have a need to restructure, has that pretty much calmed down at this point in time? And that's why the high number of physicians saying that in the past year there's been no change, because bulk of the changes have already taken place?
There have been significant changes, but there's still a lot of fertile environment for deal making. As the hospitals consolidate more, they are competing for physicians to control or partner with. So there is still activity by and between and among many healthcare systems to acquire the unaffiliated physicians, but they aren't necessarily the solos. They could be large groups. So that activity is still rampant, and we're still involved with lots of those transactions. Wall Street, the private equity funds, are still looking at medical practices in New Jersey. There is still activity there. The specialties that they're looking to invest in include urology, orthopedics, gastroenterology, dermatology, emergency medicine, anesthesia, et cetera. So they see that there's still an economic opportunity to acquire these practices. In the transactions we've been involved in, I think initially it creates a huge economic bump to the selling physicians, but over time the reimbursement goes down. So if you're a physician with a shorter window of practice, like 5 to 7 years, these types of economic transactions may be worthwhile economically. But if you are a physician with 10, 15, 20 years to go, I don't believe these arrangements are going to be good for those younger physicians, because the only moving part in all of this is physician compensation. So if physician compensation is going down from the third-party payers, and these private equity firms need to show return to their investors, the only other place where they can get this money from is physicians, which will accelerate reduced compensation for the physician provider. So it's become a very a crazy time looking into these deals. Some of them are good for doctors, some of them are not. One size doesn't fit all, but that's what's competing with the healthcare systems to acquire physician groups, because they, the healthcare systems, are not able to come up with the type of economic funding that Wall Street's able to come up with. So physician groups have three strategic movements now. Four, really. One, stay the same, and hopefully things will blow over. Be part of a larger, number two, be part of a larger single and multi-specialty physician-owned group to add leverage and economies of scale to provide health care to your patients and also reduce your overhead. Number three, enter into a strategic alliance with your local health care system. And number four, pursue or look into, at least for due diligence purposes, what could a private equity play mean economically for the physician provider. And that's what we're trying to guide our physicians through, these types of four different choices, to see what's best for them, their specialty, where they are in their practice, and what makes sense strategically for them.
And taking all that into consideration, as if that was not enough for a medical practice, you have, since just over a year now, the out-of-network law has a bunch of disclosure requirements, binding arbitration mandates, and a few other elements, where in your survey, it's almost just over 30% of the physicians and the practices say they're not sure yet whether or not this law is going to impact them.
Well, yes, and it was an interesting response. I think probably because a lot of physician groups are in network, so it didn't really matter, and they haven't come up with their renewal cycle to renegotiate with the payer. The providers were always interested in pro-transparency. Patients need to know whether the provider they're going to is in-network or out-of-network. That was never the issue. The issue becomes, once the decision is made for the patient to go to the out-network provider, what is the provider supposed to be paid and how is the provider to be compensated? Because it's always relieved the patient of the obligation. It becomes an insurance provider negotiation. It's still a little early to see how these negotiations have played out. Just a few weeks ago, the Department of Banking Insurance issued a study which listed how all of these arbitrations have evolved. But the reason you need to have the out-of-network option from a provider standpoint is because without that, you lose any leverage to negotiate appropriate and fair reimbursement from the third-party payers. So we're still early into the process. I wasn't surprised at the response from the survey. Again, it's a good baseline. It'll be interesting to see how our providers respond next year and whether they still see it the same way.
This would be interesting. To me, this is the most interesting question we have to wrap in about a minute here. Has the opioid crisis impacted your prescribing practices in any way? Almost 52% said that they now prescribe them less often, and even more importantly, suggest alternatives to patients rather than opioids.
We all should be happy to see that as it's become much more public, the devastating effects here in New Jersey and nationally are almost unspeakable in terms of how it's impacted. But it's good to see that the good physicians here, the appropriate physicians, recognize the dangers and they've altered their practice. And we're going to see that continue to occur more and more. And that's a good thing, how they've responded.
And the same question, 12% of patients are asking for alternatives as well. So that'll be another number to see if that continues to increase year by year. It's called the Brock Eichler 2019 New Jersey Healthcare Monitor. You can find out more details above me on what we talked with here and find out more about the services that Brock Eichler offers, medical practices at Brock Eichler, EICHLER.com. We've been talking with their managing member and healthcare law practice here, John Fammer. John, always information that's interesting from this survey every year, and thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks so much for having me.